everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks, Tom engineering and producing our show, and he's all fueled up on that cinnamon roll. My goodness, thank you to the morning team for leaving some of those homemade cinnamon rolls, pecan cinnamon rolls, and they came courtesy of, I believe, Tom Firth at Hacienda del Sol.
Hacienda del Sol, yeah.
Brought them to the morning guys. There were some leftovers for us. I've already polished off one.
I have one that's just sitting over there.
Yeah.
Baiting me.
I know, and there's one left for Dylan Smith.
Hey, that sounds good.
Dylan is joining me in studio. It is the Buckmaster Show. How are we going to get through this next week? My goodness, this is going to be a historic heat wave.
I'm going to sit on the couch and consume some cold beverages, and that's about it.
Could be worse. We could be in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I will be in Phoenix next week, actually.
Oh, my God.
Right in the heart of the middle of it.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
No, thanks.
Well, swampers of the world, unite. We still have the swamp coolers. There's about 15% of us, I understand, still have swamps in Tucson. Yesterday was great. It was 1% humidity. So you're going to get about 25 degrees cooling. But who knows next week when you get into uncharted territory. On Friday, we like to do a shout-out to people like Dylan Smith, who is the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, thank you for support.
Indeed.
Other supporters, media supporters, TucsonSentinel.com, and Inside Tucson Business, the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, TucsonLifestyle.com, Southern Arizona News Examiners, and David Morales' website, the Three Sonorans, big supporters of ours. The Friday Focus interview today, Mike Ortega, city manager for the city of Tucson, is on our live line. We had hoped to have Mike in studio, but he had to attend a funeral, and I do appreciate him joining us on telephonically. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thank you. I appreciate you accommodating me. And before we get started, if you don't mind, I'd like to extend my deepest condolences to the Correa family down in Douglas in Southern Arizona.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Let's begin with some good news for the city of Tucson. The bond rating came out, and it really was good. It's a rating that I believe it's Moody's, and it is AA3. What does that mean, Mike Ortega?
Well, what that means is that obviously as we look at our debt structure, and particularly in refinancing as well as possible issuance of new debt, you get a better rate. It's just like your personal credit rating. When you have a good credit rating, you actually get a better interest rate. And Moody's actually took us from a negative outlook last year to a stable outlook this year. And as you know, in dealing with credit ratings, it's a lot easier to go negative than it is to move from negative. So I was really pleased, really proud of the team and the leadership of the council to get us to that point.
Were they looking at workforce reduction as one of the items that seemed to impress them?
Well, there were actually a few items. It not necessarily focused on workforce reduction. They really look at stability of budget, revenue to expenses. This is the second year that the council approved a structurally balanced budget, which was very important to them. The rating agencies, not only Moody's, by the way, but also the S&P and Fitch, look at this very closely. And when they see that there are one-time fixes, and even though for the time it looks like it makes sense, that causes them reason for pause. So that's one. Obviously, structurally balanced, again, this year is pretty positive. Two, they had great concerns about our pensions and pension costs, and we were able to demonstrate for them the plan, kind of what we're trying to do to address pensions into the future and kind of outline for them. So staff and I traveled to meet with them and outline it and show them what was the plan and how we approached it. And then the other is, you know, kind of what's going on in Tucson as a whole, you know, really just kind of looking at, you know, some of the things that are happening, the economy, what's going on, what are the trends from a sales tax standpoint, what are trends for employment. And then they look at the state as a whole, you know, basically what's the economy doing in the state, what are issues that they might have. And, again, they're basically bankers, so they're looking at legislative issues that might cause municipalities trouble or, quite frankly, the economy trouble.
Let's bring in now Dylan Smith. Go ahead, Dylan.
So, Mike, the city is getting knocked around pretty hard by TPOA, the police union, over the issue of the budget. And, you know, there are plenty of folks who are saying that, you know, structurally balanced budget aside, there's still a pretty big hole trying to deal with those pensions and, a huge obligation that the city is facing there. And over the next few years, what is the city going to do about that to essentially bolster that fund?
Well, I'm sorry, Dylan, what was the last part of that?
What's the city going to do to bolster the police pension fund? How are you going to fill that hole?
Sure. So traditionally, what we've done is we've approached it on a percentage of employee pay. And that's I'll call it the traditional way, and most cities do that. But what we found is that for Tucson, because of the vacancies that we carried in both police and fire, we actually were shorting the pension contribution long term. And so what I've suggested to the council over the last couple of years is to not only make the full payment, kind of pay the entirety of the bill, but also pay in excess. And so last year we made, I believe 2 years ago, we made about a $3 million excess payment. Last year we made just around $2 million. And I'm suggesting to them that we consider something similar in the future. So that's the first thing, to try to stabilize those costs. Now keep in mind that some of the increases, some of the well, I'll call them significant increases that we've had, are really a function of the cases that were adjudicated. So there was the Fields case that was adjudicated, and that cost was this year about $20 million. Actually, it's all closer to $23 million when you couple that with our just normal increases in cost for the actuarial folks to when they run their numbers. So I'm hopeful that that's the last of those payments for that case. But now we have the Hall case, which is on the horizon. We know that the city will have to reimburse the employees. There was legislation a few years ago where the legislature actually tried to reduce the contribution, increase the contribution to the employee, and thereby ultimately hopefully decreasing the employer contribution. Well, it didn't work out that well from the standpoint that the courts found that the legislature had no authority to do that. So now we're basically, quote, stuck with making up that difference. So what I've suggested, and we knew this was coming 2 years ago, we've been kind of waiting, and so I've been suggesting to the council that we take any excess revenues, any cash carry forward, and put it away for that purpose. And I'm happy to report that through their leadership, we've been able to squirrel away some money for that increase in pensions for this coming year. Going forward, Dylan, I'm expecting that the increases, quote unquote, will stabilize so that we're not necessarily seeing the types of increases that we've seen in the past. I mean, obviously, people are living longer, and so that's a factor in those costs. But the other piece to it is I'm expecting that over time, in the very near future, the PSPRs, the Public Safety Board that is in charge of that, will change their calculations for the return on investments. So all of those factors and probably make it so that there's less return on those investments, which could increase those unfunded liabilities in the long term.
So I'm clear on the one part, sorry.
Sure. That's all right.
Part of why there wasn't in hindsight, enough money flowing into the pension was that the rate that the city and employees were paying was based on the you know, the number of staff on the books, even though there weren't actually people in those positions. Say if, you know, you have a, you're, you know, nominally say you have 1,000 police officers, but you only have 900, you know, your numbers end up being off. Am I correct in understanding that?
That's correct. But keep in mind that the way we get, quote, the bill from the state pension fund, it's not based on the total. It's based on a percentage per employee.
Mm-hmm.
So we go along and make those payments thinking we're doing the right thing, and then you kind of scratch your head and keep seeing the unfunded liability go up. Well, you realize that they're not assuming any vacancy factors. And so even through just normal attrition, it becomes problematic in the long term because it just keeps adding to the unfunded liability.
Okay.
So what I've suggested is let's focus on the total bill regardless of the number of staff members. And that way, we can stabilize that in the very near future. Hopefully, within the next 2 or 3 years, we can stabilize that and not see the types of increases that we're seeing.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. Mike Ortega, Tucson City Manager, sticks around with us on the live line, as does Dylan Smith. It's exactly 12:15 in Tucson. It's the Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation. And perhaps it's Saturday afternoon, you're listening to our re-airing of the program. Friday show re-airs at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon on KVOI. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library. Visit library.pima.gov to find your next favorite book and browse hundreds of activities and special events just for kids now through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or library.pima.gov to find out how.
Hi, Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday at noon on the Buckmaster Show, we'll have our Monday political face-off. Our team of commentators next week will be John Munger and Vince Robigo, plus our quarterly water report presented by the Central Arizona Project. Buckmaster airs on AM 1030 KVOI. We've got our worldwide live listening podcasts and pretty much 6.5 years of programs archived on my website, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Dylan Smith is with me in studio from TucsonSentinel.com. And on the Buckmaster Show live line, Mike Ortega, the city manager with the city of Tucson, has joined us here on this Friday afternoon. What is the situation, Mike, as far as the follow-up to Proposition 101? And were you surprised by the margin that 101 passed?
Well, certainly, we're very appreciative of the vote of confidence from the voter, from the people of Tucson. I think that demonstrates that they are appreciative of the work that's been done, particularly on Prop 409, but also an understanding of the need that exists out in the community, not just in roads, but also in the public safety areas of police and fire. So next steps, the council will be asked to appoint the oversight commissions. There's a public safety oversight commission and a road oversight commission group. And so that process is ongoing now. I believe there has been an advertisement for people that are interested in serving to submit their application, I believe, along with statement of interest. And that's to be found on TucsonAZ.gov, our website. I think the deadline for that, as I recall, is the 23rd of June. So they've got a little bit of time yet. So that's the kind of, we'll call it, the oversight logistics. As far as the actual what's next, we've been organizing ourselves internally, looking at we'll call it the long lead times on some of the equipment, particularly in fire, and making sure that we get those in the hopper. And, we want to stay to the schedule that was told to the voters, that was expressed as part of the publicity pamphlet. And so we are moving in that direction. We will be putting out fairly frequent information for the residents so they understand what it is that we're doing as far as, what the schedule is, what the improvements are, when we're receiving vehicles, when we're receiving the equipment, so that they're clear on what we're doing with their money.
Particularly with roads, when are you going to start spending some of that money that's going to be coming in starting next month, isn't it?
Correct. July 1 is the actual date for this tax to take effect. So, keep in mind, there is a cash flow on July 1. We don't magically get $50 million. It takes some time. So I suspect it will be probably about 8 months before we accumulate the type of cash that it will be necessary for people to start seeing the work going. But keep in mind, Dylan, that the Prop 409, we're entering the final year of that. So we've got a lot of road improvement work yet to do on 409, the last year of the program. And so it really gives us a chance for it to really look pretty seamless in terms of 409 and 101 when it comes to roads. So we're organizing ourselves, working with the current oversight group, which is the Prop 409 oversight group, to start articulating what the criterion will be for the residential streets. As you know, They have input and direction on the residential streets. So we've got some work to do yet with them and trying to organize ourselves with that. And it should work out nicely with the end of Prop 409 money.
Overall, does the city looking better in the road picture? Have we, you know, give us kind of the big picture as we are in the final year of the previous program, 5-year program. How has that changed our roads?
Well, as you know, Bill, I'm a numbers guy, so I kind of like to look at the bottom line numbers. And an estimate I saw a bit ago was that our shortfall in residential roads was about $500 million. And with the Prop 101, we're going to have an extra $1 million to put towards that. So when you ask, you know, overall, are we better off? Absolutely. Do we have a lot of work to do yet? Absolutely to that as well. But certainly, you know, the fact that we were able to take advantage of great oil prices and also a great bidding environment for Prop 409, we're actually able to do more. With those dollars, up to about 30% more than what we had originally anticipated. So that was a good thing. And I think as you look at us putting energy and emphasis, I would even suggest probably the number one concern of residents are the streets. And so the council's heard that and really working towards addressing those both short-term, mid-term, and then working on long-term strategies as well.
How about summer? The summer of the kids program, the swimming pools. I know over the years we've not been able to open all of. I don't even know how many swimming pools we have. I think it's a couple of dozen. I think in the city, I don't know if we've been able to open all of them. Or are you planning? What is the issue there?
Well, the issue in most of those areas is the lack of capital to repair them. And so if you look simplistically at some of the pools that have been closed, they were closed mostly for capital needs. Certainly there were some pools that were closed years ago because of operations. I believe that most of those were reopened, but the vast majority of those that remain closed are a function of the capital needs to improve them, and some of them need to be totally torn out and rebuilt. Now, clearly, that's an important aspect of the community and summer in Tucson with, as I heard earlier, we'll call it the pre show, talking about the heat wave that we've got coming. So we're trying to be sensitive to that. The council has authorized me to move with free swimming for kids that are 18 and younger this summer, and we did it as a pilot last summer. You know, we found is that the energy and effort to collect $1.50 from each child that comes in is really not cost effective in terms of, you know, what it costs me to actually process it and account for it and so forth. So we went through that exercise and it was a pilot, and we're also doing that in rec centers as well. We're exploring a few things that'll greatly reduce the cost for residents to take advantage of those facilities.
So you knew that we couldn't get through this show without discussing SunTran a little bit. And run people through that just a little. I mean, it seems like we have a tangled mess that could get even messier with the contractor, the company that actually manages SunTran on behalf of the city. They want out. They don't want to do it anymore. They think they don't make enough money. You've got negotiations with the union that apparently just started a few days ago, and a contract that's ending fairly soon. What's going to happen?
Well, I can't tell you what's going to happen because I don't know. And, you know, that's the short answer. But clearly, we've got a game plan. We've had a long-term relationship with Transdev, and, you know, we're sorry to see them go. Obviously, you know, we have a bus system and a transit system to run, so we've got some ideas that we're going to be pursuing fairly quickly and moving that discussion forward. With regard to the Teamsters, I know they've been at the table, and I don't think it was just recently. I think they've had a few discussions, and so that I remain hopeful. I think that, you know, we're all in this together, and obviously no one wants to see a repeat of what happened in 2015. And we just remain optimistic that there'll be a good opportunity for us to keep the system moving and not have another strike.
What's going to happen after, what is it, the end of August,
July? It's the end of June.
Well, I'm talking about the management contract.
Oh, the management contract.
Okay. You have an contract extension with Transdev that they'll continue running the system for a few months.
Yep.
What are you going to do then? Are you going to try and extend that again? Will you figure out a longer-term plan? Or are you going to try and find a different organization to do it? Because the city is effectively barred from running SunTran directly.
Right, and that's the challenge, Dylan. Because of the federal dollars that we receive for a transit, the employees have to have bargaining rights and the ability to strike. And the charter prohibits that, as does the, you know, so we've got those challenges with the. So, you know, as you look at that, I mean, obviously, if we didn't want the federal money, then we can have a different conversation. But that's about $15 million that would be lost to this community.
That's verging on real money territory. So
yeah, that's where I come from. That's real money. So when you kind of look at that, it really focuses on what the model can look like. And we had a conversation with the council a few months ago, and quite frankly, I'm expecting this to be an opportunity to revisit that conversation, revisit not only our model, but what we can do to look at it longer term and make sure we get into a position where it's stable and so forth, which may include putting all of the transit functions under one contract. We currently have two different contracts. We have our bus and van services, SunTran and SunVan, under one contract, and then we have our SunLink contract separate. So those are the things we're going to be looking at.
All right. Mike Ortega, thank you very much. Try to stay cool, and good talking to you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Mike Ortega, city manager for the city of Tucson. Linda Valdez is waiting in the wings. She will join Dylan Smith. It's our Friday roundtable right after this.
With a little humor and whimsy, Tona Chula is honoring the environmental significance of native bees during National Pollinator Week with their Adopt a Bee campaign. With your adoption, you'll receive an exclusive invite to their pollinator party. Meet your bee and enjoy locally distilled Three Wells Tequila and Whiskey Del Bac. Sample the Garden Bistro's inventive food creations using bee pollen and honeycomb. And try the regional honey bar by Dos Manos Apiaries. Join them on Friday, June the 23rd for a pollinator party. For more information, visit tonachule.org.
Summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library. Visit library.pima.gov to find your next favorite book and browse hundreds of activities and special events just for kids now through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or library.pima.gov to find out how.
Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. You'll read stories from around the world ignored by the mainstream media. Stories from the Gatestone Institute, the Washington Free Beacon, the Washington Times News Service, and other great outlets. It is world news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Linda Valdez, editorial writer, columnist for the state's largest newspaper. Some would say the paper of record in Arizona, the Arizona Republic. Linda, good to see you.
Good to be here, Bill.
You were just sharing you're on vacation next week, the hottest week of the year.
Yes,
to get all of your home repairs.
Yeah, we picked the hottest. I picked the hottest week of the year to take some time off. And my husband's a teacher, so he's off. And we thought, oh, we'll get a lot of these outdoor projects done. So we're reassessing. We may spend a lot of time going to movies.
Well, and then Dylan, I don't think, is reassessing. Dylan Smith with us, editor, publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. I think it's still a go for Dylan to go to, of all places, Phoenix next week.
Indeed. There are a couple of journalism conferences going on up there, and I'll be spending a whole lot of time in very cold conference rooms and not venturing outside at all.
It's going to be a big story. I mean, last year we thought, oh, I hope it's just an anomaly. It's almost the exact week that we had these kind of historic record temperatures. Now, 2 years in a row, and my goodness, I just hope that the electrical grid can handle it, because when you start to talk about, I think Phoenix is expecting 121 on Tuesday.
That's what they're saying. If it happens, that's going to put a strain on a lot
big
of the
time.
Grid.
And we're kind of in uncharted territory here if we get up. We've had 117 is the all-time record, but usually those things are like a one-day deal.
Yeah, it's got to get hot to bring on the monsoon. You know, that's what causes it to happen, this sort of convection oven effect. But you know, maybe it doesn't need to be so hot that you could just walk outside with a frozen pizza and have it cook in your hand.
A little bit much. 790-2040 if you'd like to join us. Diane Douglas, Superintendent of Public Instruction for the state, was my guest this week. We spent a half an hour with Ms. Douglas, Linda, and we were talking about what happens after 301. That's Proposition 301 money, which is a lot of money for education. That's going to go away unless something is done within a couple of years.
That's right. It will sunset in 2021. The money will be gone, and it's about $600 million that goes into education as a result of a voter-approved proposition from 2000. It was a very interesting interview that you did with Diane Douglas. She has been talking for some time about wanting to go back to voters and increase it to a full cent, to add a little bit, to add extra money for education. And she wants it to go to teacher salaries, as I understand,
yes,
and capital improvements. Mm-hmm. There's another plan out of a group of businessmen in Phoenix that have announced they want to boost it to 1.5 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're this is not the business community. These are some business leaders that have announced they're going to have a push to do that. They want to raise $2 million to start the effort and get it underway. And we still don't. The governor is on board for renewing it, which is currently at a 0.6 cent. We don't know whether he's on board for increasing it.
Of course, he vows not to raise taxes, as is pointed out in the Arizona Republic editorial of June 13th. But he would support extending the tax.
He has said that this is an ongoing program. I forget exactly the term of art that he uses that makes it not a tax.
He says this is a funding program.
Funding program.
And we're going to continue a funding program. But there's nothing about he would be on board with a tax of whatever percent.
Well, increasing it would go beyond that, and and one doesn't know. I mean, the likelihood of getting it through the legislature is slim to none to get them to put it on the ballot. So somebody's going to have to do it. See, he's going to have to get the legislature to agree to something, and whether they would agree to a big increase is questionable.
And looking at this, if we don't do something as a state within the next few years, we're going to end up basically being dead last in funding education. Is there a chance that these various competing proposals could cannibalize each other? And as we've seen with some other issues, that you end up with people supporting this one or that one, but not both, and then none of them moving ahead?
You know, the thing about Diane Douglas's proposal is nobody paid any attention to it. No one has really given her much respect in her position.
They really haven't.
So I don't expect her proposal to go anywhere. Whether the business community can get this or whether they'll decide to put two on the ballot, say one to renew it and one to increase it. But as you point out, when you get too many things on the ballot, then people tend to say no to everything.
And you're saying she doesn't really get the respect, and I think that has translated into, she was sharing with me that she is going to be primaried, not just by one candidate, but already there are four candidates that are going to primary her, which is highly unusual for an incumbent. But I think that shows that she really wasn't taken seriously and hasn't been taken seriously by a lot of people.
That's true. Well, it happened to Jaime Molero when he was in there. He was primaried by Tom Horn, right?
Right.
Horn took it away from
him.
But, she hasn't. She was not considered to be a heavyweight candidate when she ran. I actually think she's grown into the job more than I would have expected her to, and she's become a real champion for teachers, mm-hmm. which heaven knows they could use it.
And she's disagreed with the governor. As she pointed out in our interview, she does not like this new certification process.
Well, she and the governor have kind of been at loggerheads from the beginning, as well as the legislature and the State Board of Education.
People are coming out. It's primary season just around the corner. I mean, it's many months away, but
more than a year away, really.
A name from the past, Rodney Glassman, is formed an exploratory committee.
Yep. Rodney Glassman wants to make a comeback, political comeback. He's walked away, but actually did a couple of years ago, sort of quietly walked away from the Democrats after, he lost that Senate race to John McCain. He stepped down from the Tucson City Council to run for that office.
That wasn't even close, was it?
No.
No.
He's going to make a comeback to vice mayor. That was his highest position.
He had that on his business cards, vice mayor, the meaningless
Which is
office.
A rotating position, right?
Generally. And then he made a couple of attempts to be the state chairman of the Democratic Party, and it was rebuffed in those moves. So he decided that he wanted to be a Republican instead. And folks up north are going to be seeing Rodney Glassman out and about as a Republican.
As a candidate for Arizona Corporation Commission.
And so we might see him back down here again as well. It's been a rather interesting reaction. You would think that somebody who had been elected to the Tucson City Council as a Democrat would be, championed by local Democrats, and that doesn't really seem to be the case, especially at this point.
Well, you'd also think he'd be highly suspect in Maricopa County if he tries to make himself out to be a Republican.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of an interesting race. We'll see how much traction he gets, and really how many people end up declaring in the primary for that office. It gets, not the sort of attention that it deserves. The Arizona Corporation Commission is really the elected body in this state that has the most effect on your pocketbook day in and day out. And so many of the other offices get all the heat and light and attention, and that one doesn't.
And there's so much shenanigans that have been going
on
lately.
More and more.
It's just,
there's a trial underway up there in Phoenix about that?
Allegations, well, indictment for bribery, and it's very questionable. There's still a whole lot of questions out there about the 2014 election and how that was funded, and
Tons of basically secretive money from Arizona Public Service got sent to their favored candidates.
Hasn't been getting a lot of it's been sort of under the radar here in Tucson, but that's a big story, certainly,
yes,
for the state.
Yes, it is. It is a big
Dylan,
story.
You kind of, getting back to who's in, who's out, that's kind of the guessing game right now with Arizona's CD2, the seat, of course, currently held by Martha McSally. We had Matt Hines, who challenged McSally in the last go-round. He announced this week, you kind of articulated it this week at TucsonSentinel.com. So who really has filed so far, do you know?
Well, there are people who have filed, people who are poised to file, people who are, you know, rather somewhat more quietly floating their names, but who, you know, are very, very likely to jump in. When you look at it, right now there are 7, maybe 8 candidates at, you know, one level of being official or not on the in the Democratic primary for a race that is even that primary is more than a year away still.
Right.
People are definitely jockeying for position, trying to get an early head start in fundraising. Matt Hines threw his hat in the ring again, wants to take another stab at it.
Billy Kovacs is a young guy we interviewed a couple of weeks ago. He's 30 years old, political newcomer. Jeff Lattice, who has run before, he lost to Gabby Giffords in 2006.
In the 2006 primary. He's not an official candidate yet, but he is very close to making it, so he's got an exploratory committee.
And then I'm interviewing the former Assistant Secretary of the Army, who says she's very much in it.
Yeah. What was her name again?
Mary Sally. Boy, that's going to be confusing if she gets
exactly.
McSally versus Mary Sally Metella. I believe that's how her name is pronounced. But she's got all sorts of government experience.
Yeah, she's got experience at the D.C. level. She can bring that to the table. And former Congresswoman, Senate candidate Ann Kirkpatrick wants to, instead of trying to primary her, basically the Democrat who is now up in CD1, she is probably going to run down here in CD2. And other people that I'm sorry, we probably haven't mentioned. There are
Bruce Wheeler,
former state legislator,
and former Tucson city councilman.
He's put his hat in the ring a few times, pulled it back out a couple of times. He wants to join the fray.
And I don't know this individual, geologist Allison Jones, apparently has filed too.
And I think probably still a couple of people are even missing from the list that we're running down. It's
you get that many candidates. And
we'll see who can raise the money, have the name recognition, or build it, and really build a campaign. That's what it's going to take.
I can remember hosting on the TV on Channel 6 some of these 1 hour where we had 13 or 14 candidates. We gave, basically it boiled down to we would introduce who they are and you get 2 minutes to make your pitch, basically. So this is a case where if there is someone like an Ann Kirkpatrick in there, it's all about name recognition when you got that many candidates.
Well, it is all about name recognition. I think it's not very productive to have that many candidates if you're really trying to take the seat back, because mm-hmm. you diffuse your energy. You should be focusing on building support for your primary candidate, who's going to be your candidate and run in the general. And instead they'd be tearing each other apart And I think when Matt Hines announced, when he sent out his press release, he made a comment in there about how people are so upset now about Donald Trump and that's going to help the Democrats. And I got to tell you, they got to come up with something better than that, because that's basically what they were saying before the 2016 election is, oh, no, you know, people don't like Donald Trump, so the Democrats will do well. Guess what? It didn't happen. And
right.
The Democrats have got to move beyond that and start articulating something that is going to appeal to some of the people who are very dissatisfied and did vote for Trump.
Mm-hmm. And health care might be an issue that they
could
hang their hat on.
It may well be, yeah, how it plays out in the whole border. I mean, they need to be for something. It's the old cliche, but it's so true. They need to be for something.
Give people a reason to vote for you.
Precisely, yeah. Articulate something that you're for. And the Republicans are good at doing that. They're for whatever.
And McSally is going to be a very well-funded candidate.
She will be a well-funded candidate, and she's polished. She presents herself very well.
Well, in this last election, just in November, she, you know, racked up the largest win margin in that district in a decade or more.
Really?
And, you know, despite all the heated rhetoric that race was, you know, not close at all, especially mm-hmm. when you look at the standards, historical standards of what goes on in CD2, where we've had such very, very close elections in other go-rounds.
And Senator Smith, State Senator Smith, is going to be running against, he's going to hope to get a match against Tom O'Halloran in CD1. CD1 not followed as much, of course, here, but it's important. It's certainly in our listening area with Marana and Oro Valley.
Yeah, you've got an enormous congressional district that stretches
huge,
from Marana and Oro Valley,
Flagstaff.
You know, all the way up through central and eastern Arizona to Flagstaff, all the way up to the Grand Canyon and Utah border.
I'm out of time, but Richard, I'm going to honor your request for a very quick comment, and it's got to be very quick.
All right. Okay, thank you, Bill. I think whoever runs needs to run as a limited government Democrat, like Clinton did in the 90s. And all the candidates that you mentioned as potential Democrats are really boring. I mean, we need a name. We need a Mark Kelly. We need, or at the very least of boringness, we need Steve Kaye. But we need somebody dynamic. Matt Hines, I'd rather watch Vanilla Melt.
Okay.
Come on.
Richard.
We need somebody exciting, Bill.
Thank you so much. But Richard, it does bring up some. They really do need the big name in there, I think.
Well, we'll see what develops during the primary. Sometimes primaries can be very good for candidates that, you know, help them refine their message and make a platform, because they're, you know, actually competing rather than just repeating the same thing over and over again.
Dylan Smith, thank you very much. Have a safe trip up to Phoenix for
thank
your
you,
investigative
sir.
Reporters conference next week. Somehow try to stay cool. Put yourself in front of an air conditioning unit. Linda, I hope it works out for you on your week off.
You bet. We'll have a good time.
All right. Linda Valdez with us from the Arizona Republic. We'll be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive. Weekend Watch with Mr. Matt Russell, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Yes, it's going to be really hot here in Tucson, but it's not going to be too bad over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, because the elevation pushes 7,000 feet. So that means a cooler temperatures. Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org, is the place to go for all of the great places to stay and the many recreation opportunities in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson business food and beverage writer, Mr. Matt Russell. How are you, Matt?
Well, Bill, I'm melting, truth be told.
Oh, you had a great trip to San Diego. I followed it on Facebook, and then you come back midweek to this. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, what have I done to deserve this?
What's going on in the barbecue world, my friend?
You know what? I thought the smoking hot temps this weekend would kind of be the perfect context to announce the recent opening of the new barbecue joint to hit the scene, because it's called Holy Smokin' Butt.
What did you say?
You can't make this up. These guys have been a hot hit on the local food truck scene for some time, but it was customer demand that led to the opening of their new restaurant, which is on Wilmot, just north of 22nd. So expect to see all your favorite barbecue classics there, Bill, but their specialty is Texas brisket covered with a great spice rub and slow roasted over local pecan wood. The heat is on this weekend at Holy Smokin' Butts.
We love the Reed Park Zoo and the administrator, Jason Jacobs. They've got brew at the zoo this week.
They do, and you know what? It's one of my favorite summer events because it kind of showcases our local craft brewers at an evening event long after the temps start to drop a bit. And I think the zoo, as you said, always makes for a fun backdrop for sipping and snacking. So you'll sample a wide variety of local craft brews while enjoying some pub-style food, which will be there to purchase. Of course, live music and games and art demonstrations will make it an event that you must not miss. It all starts tomorrow night at 6:30. Tickets are just $40, which all benefits zoo programs. I call that craft beer for a cause.
There you go. How do we honor our fathers over dinner?
Well, you know, I'm a creature of habit when it comes to Father's Day, when my family kind of counts on me to man the grill. But any of your listeners that may want to heat up someone else's kitchen, I'd suggest going old school for Dad this year, like Little Abner's on Silverbell. Dads are going to get $5 off any entree. Or maybe the El Corral on River Road with Dad's pork ribs and chicken for just $19.99. And finally, if you're looking for modern expressions of Dad's Day dining, I always love the famous porcini braised pork shank.
Ooh.
At Riley's downtown. You know, however and whenever and wherever you decide to treat the old man on Sunday, just make sure to raise a glass to him. You know I will.
I know. Matt, thank you so much. Matt Russell.
Cheers, Bill.
And of course, Father's Day, want to wish all of the Father's Day a very happy Father's Day. Dad has been gone since 1999. Boy, I sure miss you, Dad. You've been gone from this earthly sphere, but still very much alive in my heart. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for its content. Friday, a couple of quick shout-outs. The original theme music to our program by the fine German composer Christophan. There's a link at buckmastershow.com to his website. Speaking of websites, Rosemary Brandt manages ours. Make sure all of our podcasts are up. Thanks, Rose, for the great job you do. Tom Fairbanks, it's always a pleasure looking at you through the glass. Not that I wouldn't, if there was no glass, you know, you're not contaminated. Tom Fairbanks, engineer, producer, always great to see Tom. The whole gang here at KBOI, and they all do such a great job in support of the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of all of us, have a great Father's Day weekend.